Well, leaders of the G20 group of industrialized nations are meeting today in Mexico. At the top of their agenda, Greece and the European debt. Here in the U.S., a Federal Reserve meeting later this week will take up what can be done to keep the U.S. economy moving forward. But our next guest says key banks like the Fed and the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, which tries to untangle the European debt crisis, could help, but they've been captured by the very rich, as have regulators, like the 65 regulators who were in offices at JPMorgan Chase and still missed that recent huge loss there. In fact, our guest says we have a system that's working overtime in favor of the very rich, that rather than correcting market failures, the political system is reinforcing them. Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph Stiglitz makes that case in his new book, The Price of Inequality, How Today's Divided Society Endangers Our Future, and he joins us in the studio. Welcome, Professor.
Nice to be here.
Okay, we know there is inequality. We saw the Occupy movement. We're all familiar with the 1%, 99% phrases. We know the very rich have had historic increases in income, 10 to 20-fold percent. And people on both sides of the aisle have been howling about the inability for average Americans to get ahead, and they've been blaming it on the other side of the aisle. You know, each of them have. But you say something striking, given all that we already know. You say the U.S. is actually last in the industrialized world when it comes to that, you know, pulling yourself up by your bootstraps, last?
That's right. We are no longer the land of opportunity that we once were, that we think of ourselves. We all know examples of people who've made it from the bottom to the top. We know immigrants, people have come into the country and made it. But as an economist, as a social scientist, what matters is not these exceptions. In fact, they get so much attention because they are exceptions. Mm-hmm. What matters is, what are the chances? What is the likelihood? And in those terms, America performs more poorly than any of the other advanced industrial countries for which there is data.
Well, how do you know that?
Well, people look at the numbers. You know, what are the fraction of those who say we're in the bottom that make it to the top? What
right.
are the fraction of
you
those?
Just, yeah, spreadsheet it. You know it.
And another broad way we do it is a statistical technique called the correlation. To what extent are the life prospects of a child dependent on the education and income of his parents? And in the United States, they're more dependent than they are in these other countries.
Well,
so Horatio Alger is a myth. It's a nice story,
well,
but it's a myth of the past.
And lay this out, because when you really hit us over the head with it, which you do in the book, you know, we all think everybody has a good education. No, they don't. And the very rich have been increasingly putting their children through better education and an education that isn't reachable by others.
That's right. And for instance, look at our selective schools like Harvard and Amherst. And they have a policy of needs blinds admission. You can get if you can get into the school, the wealth of your parents doesn't make any difference. But you can't get into these schools. Only 8% of those in these selective, highly selective American colleges and universities are from the bottom 50% of the population.
Well, it's even before you get to higher education. We have a two-track education system below that.
Exactly.
And you talk about things like, you know, what adds to this is sort of this vicious cycle. For instance, more and more of wealth is inherited wealth.
Well, and increasingly, a lot of the wealth is from an area that I call rent-seeking. You know, it would be one thing if...
Can we say that again? Rent-seeking.
Yes. Well, so let me try to explain what the concept is. There are two ways to get wealthy. One is to make the size of the American pie bigger, to make the innovations, transistors, lasers, things that transform our society, computer. Very few, if any, of those that are in the top come from that group.
They actually invented something
fundamental.
Right.
There are some that did some important products that are important, but those who actually did the fundamental innovations just aren't in the top. Among the top are those who do a very good job of taking money that's in the national pie and moving it from others to themselves. For instance, the bankers who engaged in predatory lending, abusive credit card practices, those don't make our economy stronger. Those don't make our economy more efficient. What they do is they take money from the people at the bottom and the middle and move it to the top.
I think Mataibbi called it sucking it like a giant squid, is how he put it. You know, and this is what it is. It's an economic term. It's not one you've made up. And it's not just, as we look at it, landlords that get rent. These are people who, companies, corporations, who just make money by what? Owning, go ahead.
A monopoly. The way you make money is raising prices, restricting output. So you make the pie smaller, but in doing that, you get a bigger share of the smaller pie, and you're actually better off.
Well, and in some ways, it's money that's just handed you by the government. For instance, you cite President Bush's legislation that when he extended Medicare, that there could be no negotiations with the drug companies.
And the effect of that was to give the drug companies a gift over 10 years that's estimated to be $500 billion. Now, that's money that could have been invested in our education and research and technology that would have made our economy stronger. But when you give a gift to the drug companies, it's making our economy weaker.
What are some other subsidies that you see that we don't recognize them as such?
Well, quite often we sell our public resources to, say, the mining companies at below competitive prices. So if you sell it to them at below competitive prices, clearly they're going to make a fortune because they have to do something. Obviously, they have to do the mining. But because they can get access to them at such a low price, they become very wealthy. Their owners become very wealthy.
Financial derivatives were given seniority in bank failures, even though, in other words, you had to pay the derivatives off first as ahead of the workers and the vendors, even though those derivatives might have caused the bank collapse?
Exactly. No, that's an example where so much of the rank-seeking is very hidden. You don't even notice it. It's in the basic rules of the game. Every society, every economy needs rules of the game. But how you write those rules of the game can benefit some to the harm of others and make the economy less efficient.
Okay, you got us thinking about a new phrase. Economist Joseph Stiglitz talking about rent-seeking corporations just pretty much sucking up money, and sometimes we don't even know it. But, you know, I'm sure people are saying, and we're hearing from some listeners right now, Professor, what about globalization? What about technology, which has so changed the equation here in the U.S.? Haven't those things also led to this inequality that Joseph Stiglitz is talking about? We'll ask you about that when we come back. Your thoughts at hereandnow.org. Are you feeling the effects of the inequality that he talks about, or is this just the way life is? Are you benefiting from it and think you should? Hereandnow.org, and back with more questions for the professor. Here and Now. Welcome back to our conversation with Joseph Stiglitz, Nobel Prize-winning economist, author of the new book, The Price of Inequality, How Today's Divided Society Endangers Our Future. He's been listing some of the ways that he says that corporations and companies have monopoly power and sort of suck money from the lower part of the economy up to the higher. And Professor, just before we move on, you have some other examples of that. But, you know, people would say, wait a second, that can't be the only reason we have this huge inequality that everybody knows exists between the very, very rich and the other 99%. There's things like globalization. You were in the Clinton administration when NAFTA was enacted. There's technology. We know that there are fewer workers required to do even more work. So what about those other factors?
Well, those are there. And one of the things I point out, though, is that those forces are shaped by politics. For instance, take the role of innovation. In the United States, we don't have good environmental laws. We don't price global warming. The result of that is that scarce innovation resources go to saving labor, even when we have unemployment, and not to saving resources, natural resources, protecting the environment. If we had forced firms to pay for their environmental costs, they would devote more of their energies to saving the environment and less to putting labor out of work. What I find so disturbing right now going on is that many of our drugstores, grocery stores, are replacing unskilled workers, checkout clerks,
sure,
with machines.
Sure.
You know, in a world where we have so much unemployment, does this make economic sense?
But that's the world that we're going to live in. You know, that's going to happen more and more.
It's going to happen, but if we shape our economy in ways that are more efficient, saving our environment, making our living standards higher, we'll actually get a more efficient economy.
Well, and this is where you say, why aren't we taxing the very, very, very wealthy more? Why aren't we taxing companies that damage the economy? And one of the reasons why is that somehow the debate has been that this is going to hurt small businesses. It's going to hurt the average person. And the average person, we've seen them, you know, in the streets protesting against that. And you say that the average American has to understand they've been sold a bill of goods. They've been told that what's good for the very rich is good for the 99%. You say the top 1%, and you're not talking about everyone. You go out of your way to say, of course, this isn't everyone. But these are the people who understand, you know, we could sell them cigarettes. We could sell them junk food. We can also sell them this bad idea.
That's right. And one of the bad ideas is trickle-down economics, that if you throw enough money at the top, everybody will benefit. I wish it were true, because if it were true, we would all be very well off because we've thrown so much money at the top.
Well, statistically, we've talked about this before, but you go to, for instance, the Bush-era tax cuts did not create jobs, for instance.
And it's even worse than that. When you tax speculators at a lower rate than those that work for a living, you distort our economy. You encourage resources to go into speculation rather than into job creation. So those tax laws actually help destroy jobs because they're not where our resources, our energy of our economy is going.
So how does this happen, the way you lay it out? You know, you say the reason that this has taken hold, this idea that what's good for the rich is good for everybody, is that the message got captured. And we were talking about capture. In addition to the Fed being captured by people sympathetic to banks and the IMF being captured and lawmakers being captured, you paint this picture of this, you know, giant capture. The media has been captured. You say the media hasn't done a good enough job of pointing it out. Is that really possible? Is it really possible that everyone is either that ignorant or that cynical, you know, for those who are part of
the scheme? Things going on. You know, when you have as much inequality and economic inequality as we have, that economic inequality gets translated into all other kinds of inequality. You get political inequality. We've moved from a system of one person, one vote to something that's better described as $1, one vote.
Or $10 million, one vote. Right, right.
And then you money buys influence in the media, like Fox, Murdoch, and we've seen the kinds of things that they've done that have been absolutely outrageous. So in fact, when you have so much economic inequality, the systems of checks and balances breaks down. And then the other ingredient is, and that goes back to the first thing we're talking about, education. One of the reasons that the United States is no longer the story of Horatio Alger, no longer the story of American Dream, is because we've weakened our public education system. And the result of that is that we are not using our most valuable resources as well as we can, and that's going to hurt our economy in the future, but also destroy our sense of opportunity.
Well, we just got a couple minutes here. You know, you lay this out. A lot of people may feel this is true. And you talk about polls that show people feel a sense of unfairness and injustice. You even talk about a poll where a survey where everybody, every American from every stripe, Democrat, Republican, rich, poor, was asked which economy they would choose if they could choose. And overwhelmingly, the majority chose the distribution that Sweden uses, where more money is distributed through taxes and everything to the lower income people. They chose Sweden over the U.S. And yet, here in this country, we can't get a tax passed.
Yeah, it is very disappointing, and it's a reflection
of— But why is it?
Well, it's a reflection of this nexus that we have between economic inequality and political inequality. You know, there still is a moment of hope here, because what we need to do to create a more equal society, not perfect equality. Nobody is seeking that, but a one with—
Yeah, well, that would rob any incentive.
Yeah,
right,
but it's a question of more equality, is that we would get a society that is an economy that's more efficient. In the past, the economic agenda is actually fairly simple, and I lay it out. In the past, when we've reached the level of inequality that we have today, we've pulled back from the brink. The Gilded Age led to the Progressive Era. The 1920s led to the social legislation in the 30s. My hope is that we'll do this once again.
Well, some of our listeners I know are saying from your lips. Others are, you know, maybe still not buying it. So, you know, maybe we'll have you back with more because it's fascinating. Nobel Prize winning economist Joseph Stiglitz, his new book, The Price of Inequality. And by the way, his subtitle says it all. He feels that this ultimately, this divided society will, of course, take down that 1% as it has in other countries. Professor Stiglitz, thanks so much for coming
by.
We'll be back with the latest news in about a minute here and now.